But to call this counseling committee meeting to order, Madam Clerk, the roll call.
Yes, Your Worship, Councilors Butler and Lubritz are absent due to previous commitments. All other members of council are present.
Thank you. We have one addendum this evening, and that is a request for an additional delegation, and we'll deal with that when we get to Section 7 of the agenda. I know Councilor Anne-Marie Noyes is present. Welcome this evening. A few announcements, so please bear with me. We haven't had a meeting here for 3 weeks, and there's been a lot of stuff that's gone on over that period of time. The first thing I wanted to mention was the opening of Minor Brothers in Stevensville on Friday, May the 26th. Fantastic new facility. Councillor Nutt was there along with the federal member of parliament, Rob Nicholson, and the provincial member, Gates. Fantastic ceremony, really quite attractive facility. It rained just at the time they wanted to cut the ribbon, so that was, I guess that helped the crops and kept the politicians down. But it was really quite an interesting day, and congratulations to Minor Brothers. It's a state-of-the-art new facility. At the end of May, beginning of June, all of the cadet corps in town had their annual inspections. We had the Army cadets on Friday, May the 26th, the Navy League on Saturday, May the 27th, and the Air Cadets on June the 3rd. And all of them did exceptionally well. They've all got good numbers, very dedicated leadership, and it's a great program for the young people in our community. And those cadet corps include both females and males, and many of them graduate, some to our military services, but they learn fantastic lessons during the course of their programming. On June the 3rd, Stevensville held its Spring Fest, and that was a fantastic weather, really good turnout. I think all the counselors got there at some point during the day. Just an ideal date, keeps getting bigger and bigger every year, and congratulations to the Kinsmen and Cadets for a fantastic event. On the evening of June the 3rd, the Bell Tower opened its artist discovery exhibits. That was the official opening of that particular exhibit, which is coupled with a mentorship program offered by Antoine Gaber, who is by trade a research scientist, but is also an artist, and he offered a program to 20 selected Fort Erie, Niagara, and beyond artists to assist them in realizing their potential with respect to the commercial opportunities that arise out of some of the fantastic art that they brought. That exhibit continues until June the 16th, during the day, on the weekends, in the evenings, during the week, and the hours can be obtained through the Bell Towers website. On June the 5th, we had the Pride flag raising here, and also on June the 5th, and the 6th, a number of individuals in the community participated in the painting of tiles for the 150 mosaic, which has been now completed and will be unveiled on next Monday, June the 19th, at 5:45 p.m. in the atrium of the Leisureplex. It's the Canada 150 Community Mosaic Mural, and it's unbelievable how the thing works. There were 150 separate tiles. 150 individuals painted each tile. They were given the paints that were to be utilized for the various tiles, and the artists who were responsible for putting this together then compiled those 150 tiles and end up with a mosaic that has been supposed to be predetermined in image. And I guess we'll find out how well that turns out next Monday. But it's really an extraordinary opportunity for community building. And I urge everyone who's interested, who participated, to come out next Monday at 5:45 at the Leisureplex. On Saturday, Point Avenue Lighthouse held a 100th anniversary celebration. And that lighthouse was commissioned, obviously, 100 years ago. And it now is owned by the town of Fort Erie. They had tours as well out to the this year's opening tours out to the lighthouse. And Rick Doan emceed the program was hosted by the Point Avenue Lighthouse Preservation Society. They had a very good turnout in terms of elected officials. John Maloney, who was the MPP and the current mayor of Port Colborne, was in attendance, as was the mayor of Port Colborne at the time, Vance Badaway, who is now an MP. Wayne Gates, our MPP, was there. Councillor Lubritz was also in attendance, and it was a very good ceremony. Again, a beautiful day. That evening, the elected officials all gathered again in Stevensville. So MP Rob Nicholson, MPP Wayne Gates, Councillor Nutt, and I were invited to participate in the 70th anniversary of the chartering of the Stevensville Kinsmen. It's a really nice event, and the Kinsmen recognized both Gary Pearson and Don Cole with life memberships, which is a very prestigious recognition for members. Shows that they're held in high esteem among their fellow members, and that they have made great contributions to our community. The next day was the revival of the corporate challenge in Fort Erie, and want to congratulate Ray Rosatani, who, along with a few other individuals, brought back to Fort Erie an event that had been held here for many, many years, the Corporate Challenge, which brings together members of teams from various employers, typically in the municipality, to compete in very, I would call them silly events, but some took them very seriously. I can say that none of the teams did very well in the pee sucking event, whereby you suck up a pee with a straw and then drop it into a vase. And the good news there is that obviously no one in Fort Erie sucks. So that turned out very well. Councillor Passero and I were members of the town troopers. We won the Spirit Award. And that was because we had some handlers who were very adroit at putting together a program, uniforms, and even I was impressed. We were that good. There were no injury. Well, there were no casualties. There were some injuries, but no fatalities. I would say Councillor Passero was injured. Mr. Kernahan was injured. I'm sure some of the others were sore today. But there were 18 teams of 13 members. All of the money raised was donated to Fort Erie Community Living. I would say winners were corporate punishers. Second place was active care team. And the third place was Canusa Logistics. They all did very well, and it was a great day, great opportunity for community, building community spirit in Fort Erie, as well as making a great contribution to a very important institution in our community, community living. And I'm advised that there were over 2,500 items donated to COPE as part of the competition as well. The next announcement has to do with the Rods and Relic Car Show, which also took place yesterday. Again, a fantastic event. They hold this every year. They raise money for Ender Wishes. And this year they had a very good turnout. The mayor's choice for Ford was a 1935 Ford Coupe owned by Jim Fretz. Had I been able to take the car home, I would have selected the Shelby that was there. It was pretty impressive. But they had a great day, and congratulations to the organizers of that event. June 16th, Friday, is the Wall of Fame dinner in Fort Erie, where they recognize the athletes, previous accomplished athletes who have made an impression upon our sports scene in Fort Erie. That dinner takes place at the Leisureplex, and tickets, if you're really pressed for a ticket, I'm not exactly sure where you can get them, but you can call the town hall and speak to my secretary, Diana. She can assist you on that. And of course, Sunday, next Sunday is Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to all the fathers around. My final announcement has to do with a meeting that Councillor McDermott and I attended earlier today with respect to the Woodbine Entertainment stall policy. We, MPP Gates was able to arrange a meeting with Minister of Finance Charles Souza. Minister of Agriculture, Leal, and MPP Bradley were also on the telephone. Jim Tiber, the general manager of the Fort Erie Live Racing Consortium, and his main official, Tom Valiquet, were also present. And we had an opportunity to discuss the significance of the Woodbine's stall policy, which presents a significant danger to Fort Erie in terms of the jobs here, in terms of the spin-offs from those jobs, in terms of agriculture, not only in Fort Erie but across the province, because it affects the breeding stock, which also is important and is really the fundamental aspect of horse racing. Without breeding stock, there can't be races because there are no horses. We believe that the Woodbine entertainment stall policy is designed specifically to attempt to eliminate competition from Fort Erie, which is the only other thoroughbred racetrack in Ontario. The meeting was very positive. We had an opportunity to put forward to Minister Souza our concerns. We impressed upon the minister the significance of this policy, the effect it would have on not only the town of Fort Erie, but the region and the thoroughbred horse racing industry in Ontario. And really, the how contrary the move is in terms of the Premier's policies and her efforts to revitalize a sustainable horse racing industry in Ontario. We spoke of the importance as well of Fort Erie being included in the Horse Racing Alliance, which is made up of a number of the majority of the standard bred horse racing tracks and Woodbine, which also has standard bred racing, but does not include Fort Erie, the only other thoroughbred racetrack in Ontario, and four other standard bred tracks, some of which are large. And so we impressed upon the minister the importance of having all of these tracks in that alliance, because otherwise they're not getting the benefit of the advice and the experience from the owners of those and operators of those tracks. The minister had with him his assistant deputy minister as well as his chief policy advisor. They were very familiar with what's going on. I must say that the minister seemed at times to be anguished over the position taken by Woodbine, has charged his staff with coming up with a solution quickly to this particular matter. So we await hearing from him, but we believed it was a very positive meeting and one that I think accomplished our objectives at the outset. Those are the announcements for this evening, and that then takes us to disclosures of pecuniary interest. There are none. That takes us to the next item, public notices of upcoming meetings, of which there are none. There are no public meetings scheduled for this evening. That then takes us to planning and development services. And Councillor McDermott, I will hand the chair to you.
Thank you, Your Worship, and welcome to planning and development services. First up on our agenda is a presentation and a delegation by Donna Hind, principal of the planning partnership, who will give us some improvement updates on Bay Beach. Thank you.
Hey, we're good? Okay. So we've organized the update in the presentation. I'm going to walk council and the people in the audience through the presentation. I'm going to remind everybody a little bit about the timeline. The master plan, the Bay Beach master plan, was approved back in January 2016. The planning partnership team was retained to carry out detailed design in March 2016. Along the same time, staff initiated many ongoing initiatives, which included completing a topographical survey of the site, geotechnical report, demolishing the lobster house, benefit permit, the toad monitoring study, and advertising and preparing a site sign. Over the course of the last year, the planning partnership team has been completing the design development drawings for the park. They were about 60% complete last summer, and the package is now nearing the 90% completion stage. The team expanded from the one that you're familiar with through the master planning process. The planning partnership continued to manage the project, coordinate it, do the landscape architecture. Parsons were included on the team for road design and all things engineering. Thier Curran did the architecture on the buildings and the gate kiosks. Baird continued to help the team with shoreline protection, and then we had specialists in lighting design. Wanted to remind everyone the master plan that was included in the Bay Beach master plan. That document included order of magnitude construction costs for a total of about $2.1 million, and that document attributed that budget to a number of items that are listed down the side. That budget estimate was based on very high-level master planning exercise, and it was intended to be refined through the detailed design phase, the phase that we're in now, and then ultimately finalized when the project is tendered. In my experience in being a landscape architect for a few decades now, the costs always vary from the order of magnitude costs that were included in a high-level master planning exercise. So over the course of the last year, the team has been doing very detailed design and construction drawings that have included grading and planting design, layout, details on the structures in the plan, all the details required for contractors to build the park improvements. The master plan included a number of projects, the Northwest parking lot, the development parcel on the northeast, Erie Road improvements, and then the park. I want to make it very, very clear from the beginning of the presentation that accessibility has not been compromised through the detailed design phase of this exercise. The project absolutely is AODA compliant with the width of the paths, slope, the materials that are chosen, the ramp to the beach, the height of the handrails, the surface treatment planned for the playground itself, the washroom and its design for accessible stalls, for a change room, for showers, the site furnishings, the water fountain, and then the beach mats that take visitors from the edge of the park right out to the water's edge. The Northwest parking lot was included in the master plan, and it was intended that this would be done in association with development in the northeast lot. Since the town has finalized the agreement with the Crystal Beach Hill Cottagers Association, their parking lot will be available to Bay Beach visitors. So we're recommending that the Northwest parking lot now be upgraded in association with adjacent development. So the first line item I'm going to walk through is Erie Road. It includes lay-bys, sidewalk improvements, and that then extends all the way to the parking lot of the Crystal Beach Hill Cottagers Association as per the agreement. So the item on the left where it says master plan cost estimate, I'm going to be reminding the group what estimates we included in the master plan document and then the updated document and give a little bit of explanation as we go along of why it was over or under. And in this case, it's under because it was refined by the Parsons, the engineers we had retained for this phase of the exercise. The next item is site preparation, demolition, and removals, and this item has now increased largely because of more expansive steps, concrete walls, barriers, catch basins, asphalt paving that had to be removed, and then the team is also anticipating having to remove more sand than they had originally anticipated on the east side of the site to make sure that there are open views through to the water. In terms of park structures, this included the washroom building, two gate kiosks, the lobster house pavilion. It includes the armor stone seawall, includes servicing, pergola, and then the playground. So the items, again, down the left reflect the costs that were carried forward in the master plan. And then moving forward, the updated cost reflects the revisions. For example, the $84,000 that was suggested for the pavilion and for the lobster house. The quantities of armor stone went up. The washroom went up a little bit because largely due to the details of design with respect to the components in the interior of the space. In terms of the park structures for the washroom building, you recall that we included in the master plan several examples of current washroom structures in parks around Southern Ontario. And so we're trying to reflect the character of a kind of contemporary addition to the park with the design of the new washroom pavilion, their washroom building in Bay Beach. We had received some quotes from manufacturers of the pavilion that we're planning for the Lobster House, and then some quotes for the design of the pergola, which frames the area of the playground. In terms of all the hard surfaces on the park, this includes the Festival Square, the beach overlook and the railing, walkways, the boardwalk, pedestrian lighting, and the maintenance driveway, which is on the west edge of the property that provides access directly to the washroom building. And this has gone up a little bit, largely due to the foundation requirements under the terrace and requirements to modify that maintenance driveway so it functions appropriately for the garbage truck operations. The planting layer, trees, shrubs, sod, and dune planting, reduced it slightly to make modifications to the overall budget. And then finally, site furnishings, the benches, bollards, bicycle lockups, picnic tables, chairs, and other seating was reduced slightly because we were selecting at this stage more affordable furnishings, and we were replacing some of the more detailed bollards with armor stone bollards. So in the end, these two drawings are comparing the master plan on the left that was included in the document with the revised master plan that still is illustrating the main walkway, the east walkway, Festival Square, the ramp down to the beach, the shore protection wall, the washroom building, maintenance driveway, two gate kiosks, the one here and the one in the other entrance to the east of the park, planting, the playground area, and then the terrace overlook. What happened through the design development phase is the order of magnitude cost that was included in the master plan report went up to $2.6 million through the detailed design exercise. So our exercise over the past little while was to find savings. So we reviewed the budget that was estimated through detailed design and came up with three categories of cost savings. One, we could defer some park elements to a later phase. The second, we could reduce some of the quantities. And the third, we could seek donations from service clubs and community partners that was anticipated in the master plan. So the items that we're suggesting for deferral include the Northwest parking lot, include the Northwest walkway, the pavilion, the pergola around the playground, and the boardwalk that wraps up and around the armor stone wall. Our thinking for selecting these kinds of elements, the pergola, the pavilion in particular, is that with laying out complete and solid foundation of all the surface elements in the park, so all the terrace material, the walkways, the planting, and even setting the foundation for the Lobster House Pavilion, it's a relatively easy addition to come in and place it then on top of the finished park surfaces. When we did a summary then between the estimates in the master plan, the detailed cost estimate, and then the recommended budget changes, we needed to then try and figure out how we could come up with the difference between the detailed design estimate and target the at something closer to the master plan order of magnitude. So I'll walk you through the three components. So the deferral of some of the park elements would include the pergola, the pavilion at the Lobster House, the boardwalk, the west walkway. We can reduce some of the quantities in paving, remove playground curb, reduce some of the quantity and sizes of vegetation, reduce some of the furnishings, and this also helps with the donations that we may be getting. And then with seeking donations for the beach mats, the bike racks, and some benches, what happens is that the net savings is around $375,000, which we take away from from the cost estimates through detailed design, and we get to a budget of about $2.26 million. So we are requesting an additional $75,000 to meet the scope of the work that I walked through. In terms of the next steps, through this council presentation, we're seeking direction to the team and to staff to then finalize the 90% drawing package to get it ready for a construction and then to tender construction and actually begin construction in the fall, this fall. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Don. Are there any comments or questions of council? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Donna, for the updates. If council were to look to stay on our original budgets and further remove $75,000 to get us on track, where would those cost savings be found?
Sanson?
Yes, it's for as through you, Mr. Chair, as staff, we felt that we have trimmed as much from this as we reasonably could while maintaining the integrity and all the features. I guess I would suggest in terms of taking out another $75,000, you might start to look at reducing the width of the main pathway coming in and perhaps the size of the festival square. So we'll need to start reducing some of the main paved areas. There aren't a lot of other features. We've really reduced the plant material. Definitely the washroom is a very important feature that we'd want to maintain. There aren't, I don't think, a lot of extras in the washroom. The washroom's essentially toilet sinks, some change rooms, and some showers, plus three accessible stalls. So I think, and we also need to maintain the shoreline protection. So I think you start to look at some of the paved surfaces. The paved surfaces that have been used are essentially concrete and stamped concrete. So we're not putting in granite paving stones or anything like that. We're using very economical materials at this point. So.
I could, Mr. Chair. The contingency fund that is mentioned in the documents, what do we anticipate needing contingency funds for, provided that it's not going towards a tender that comes in over budget? Are we anticipating to find something when we're excavating? Are we anticipating any additional costs through further design? I know that it's developed as a percentage of the overall budget. It's a sizable sum of funds, and I'm just wondering if we anticipate, although we call it contingency because you don't anticipate, but where do we stand as far as that goes?
Typically, you would carry a 10%, or we typically try to carry a 10% contingency. We did reduce it a little bit to 8%. I think that we felt it was important. We don't always carry a contingency, but in this case, we felt it was important because we are not 100% sure where the foundations from the old cottages sit, and we might need to remove some of those. So I think that was why we felt it was important to continue with a contingency regard.
Okay, that's all I have for now, Mr. Chair. I have additional questions, but they're just for staff, so I'll wait until the report's on the floor.
Thank you, Councilor Passero. Mayor Redicott.
Thank you, Councilor McDermott. Was there consultation with, I know that there was consultation with the Accessibility Advisory Committee throughout the process here where design was being undertaken. Was there any consultation with them when we got to this stage where there was some determination about what should be included, what shouldn't be?
Through you, Mr. Chair, there was not consultation with the Accessibility Advisory Committee at this stage. I believe we felt that we've maintained the integrity of the washrooms and the accessibility features in the washrooms. We've maintained the widths and the materials and the slopes of the paved surfaces, which is very important. We've maintained the integrity of the ramp, the slope of the ramp, the landings of the ramp, the railings of the ramp. So I believe we felt that we've maintained most of the accessibility. I can't think of any accessibility features that we've removed other than the pathway and the boardwalk. So access to the site is still available. We've removed a couple of pathways.
If I might, Mr. Chair, what about the I believe there was some type of matting on the actual beach itself. Does that remain?
We have spoken with the Burt Miller Nature Club last year about partnering with them to construct and provide beach mats similar to what's at Waverly Beach Park, and we still intend to move ahead with that. So that was our intent, was beach mats similar to those.
If I might, Mr. Chair, at Waverly Beach, the beach mats run from the boardwalk out towards the water. What about what appeared to be some type of walkway or matting that ran the length of the beach east to west?
Yeah, our discussion with them was to use a similar type of matting on the beach running east to west, and then that would stay there all season long. So we were intending to use the same thing along the beach.
And that is still part of the plan going
forward.
Still
intending.
It's not one of the deferred items. If I might, Mr. Chair, the we could go to, I think it's slide 24, which sets out that one there. I wonder if Ms. Hind, if you could explain to me how these numbers work. So I get the master plan for the first item, 45,000. The detailed design is now 143. How does it get to 163?
Well, on that item, we're carrying that's where we're allocating the 20,500 that was required for demolishing the lobster house.
Was that not part of the original master plan costing at maybe some other point?
No.
Okay. Then the next item.
So then the next one, we're carrying about $7,800, I recall, for some additional work that's required on Erie Road.
So I don't understand is if you take 167 from 300, it wouldn't be 175. How did the 175 arise?
Oh, so the details, so we allocated $300,000 in the master plan as a lump sum. The detailed design estimate then when we had Parsons do the work came in at $167,660, and then there was a further estimate that suggested that we had to allocate a little bit more to that $167,000 to complete the work on Erie Road. So it was like $7,800 or something.
All right. And was that wasn't accounted for at all, the additional work on Erie Road in the original master plan design costing?
Well, that one kind of went up. It was half of what we had anticipated, but then to be safe, we wanted to allocate another $7,900 into that component of it.
I see. And for the structures, you've indicated, how that all works out to $1,043,000, and that's by removing the pavilion on a provisional basis, the pergola.
Right. Correct.
Add a garbage enclosure and don't do the concrete curbing around the playground. And then when we get down near the bottom, there's a figure of $219,410 for recommended budget changes. That would, I presume, include what's been identified in our report as administration and fees.
So that's now a tally of all the fees. So it includes the design fees of the planning partnership team, and it's allocated on the slide up above. And then it includes administrative fees of the town. And now it also includes $80,000 for construction administration that would go if the town needed to hire a specialist to do construction administration or hire consultant, however there's some money in that budget for construction administration, so to oversee the few months when the work is being done.
I'm assuming, Mr. Chair, that you've had some discussion with staff about whether they intend to hire someone to administer the construction. Do we know that?
When the planning partnership submitted the proposal for detailed design and construction documentation, they also provided a quote for contract administration. That was staff's hope at the time that they would perform the contract administration. So that was a total of just over $80,000. They provided us a price for that.
Go back to page 24, if we could, slide 24. We understand what the $120,000 is because you've broken that down in slide 31, but I don't see $80,000 anywhere in here. So at that time, maybe it's unfair to ask you that question. Maybe that's a question I should ask when we get to the report.
So, So the way that it gets to 219 is it starts with the 120, and then 139 is with the addition of the town's administration fees. I think it was about $17,000. And there was also some non-rebatable HST that was order of...
Well, that's down at the bottom. But I think that
the
difference is
the small item that went on the 120. It was like $2,200 or something on the $120,000 design fees, and then we added on the $80,000, which got to the 219,410.
And that $80,000, just so that I'm clear, that would be contract administration if your company were hired to do that.
Correct.
Go to slide 11, please. I'm presuming that we will have pedestrian crossings as part of the that we're going to be putting out. Go to the next slide, please. I think it was at this slide that you mentioned something about the lookout. And is the lookout being, is that one of the things that's going to be recommended to be provisional?
No, it's included.
Going to remain.
Correct.
Okay. And then slide 17, if I might, Mr. Chair. So this shows the boardwalk in or out?
It out.
And the boardwalk would be running from the beach back towards Erie Road?
I'll show you. I'm going to go ahead to slide 20. See on the left, it's the brown arc around the armor stone wall back up to the playground area.
So from an accessibility perspective, what's the significance of removing that, if any?
So for accessibility, there's still the main route into the site, the big wide through the center of the site. It comes down to the ramp that gets down to the lower beach level from which there will be the beach mat.
So that's an area that you could walk, where the boardwalk would be removed if it does, until such time as it maybe is constructed. That would be an area you could walk, but you may not be able to traverse if you have accessibility concerns.
And I should also say that there's the pathway around the playground remains as well. So that sweeps in from the east.
Thank you. I do have some questions when we get to the report stage. Thank you very much, Ms. Hunt.
Are there any further questions?
I wanted to make just one point about the contingency. May I?
Okay, sure.
That it's contingency, so it's money in the bank. And if there are no surprises on the site, that it could be available at the end of construction to be allocated to other items. And so you always hope that everything will go smoothly and you won't need to draw on those contingencies. So that just sits in a bank account until it's required.
Thank you very much. Could I have a mover on the recommendation? Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. And I will say...
I'm sorry, just one second.
Vote on that.
All in favor? Thank you. Sorry about that.
Thank you. I just saw the mayor... I thought, I can come up. I thought maybe the rules had changed. And first of all, I will say that when I prepared this, some of the information I gathered today answered a lot of the questions. I think, Mayor, you asked a lot of the questions I wanted answers to, so I do appreciate that. And so if I have to kind of stumble a little bit, I've tried to cross out some of the things already. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I appreciate the opportunity to address concerns regarding the Bay Beach site improvement update. It is refreshing to see Council, for the most part, all rowing in the same direction, a direction that I feel is supported by most of the taxpayers. Although I'm a member of the Accessibility Committee, I'm speaking on my own behalf. Unfortunately, with how the current rules for Council regarding delegation registration stands, it was not possible to discuss this matter with the committee. I recall, in my opinion, how delighted the committee was to be involved in making suggestions and input into the accessibility of Bay Beach and seeing the accessibility features included in the design. And I, today, listening to Ms. Hine, I see that most of those recommendations are going to move forward and be implemented, and I think that's wonderful. Individuals with mobility challenges need all the accessibility features to remain and be constructed. There is no alternative for people with mobility needs to access the beach and the park, and the ramp and the beach mats are essential. I'm pleased to see that they're going to remain. And people with accessibility needs include parents with strollers, individuals that use a cane, walker, wheelchair, scooters, crutches, anyone with mobility issues, decreased strength, poor balance, decreased range of motion, sensory deficits will all benefit from these changes. So if any delays or any further removals have to happen, I hope that the accessibility features will remain as discussed today. Part of my confusion was in the report itself, and I would recommend some process improvements. If me as a layman looking at that report, it appeared to me that some of the accessibility features were removed. And I'm pleased to hear that they have not been for the most part, with the exception of the boardwalk, even though I'd like that to stay. But I can understand that there has to be give and take. One of my confusions is the beach mat, which says minus $8,000. I may be off. And then I hear, where's beach mats on here? Anyway, it says minus $16,000. And then I heard through the grapevine today that the Burt Miller Club was going to be donating the $16,000. But earlier in this report, there's a reference to $85,000 already being contributed to this project, and the beach mats is listed as one of those things that may fall under this $85,000 donation by different fundraising efforts. So I'm not sure if we're talking about an additional $16,000, so that now the contribution is going to be $101,000 from the various fundraising groups, or if the minus $16,000 is referring to something else. And I would appreciate some clarity on that. Some of the other things are the costs that were also in Appendix 2 were concerned, and I think the mayor has addressed most of them. Specifically under site preparation, there was an increase of $20,000 above both first estimates without an explanation, either on the chart or in the narrative of the report. Erie Road design, again, was an increase of $8,000 from both columns, again, without explanation in the report. My big concern was under administration fees, and I know it was talked about earlier, was an increase of $80,000, again, above the first two cost estimates, again, without any explanation. Overall, there was an increase of $108,000 above the detailed design cost estimate, again, without any explanation. It was very helpful for me coming here and hearing the explanation, but when we read these reports, it would be helpful to have that originally. Adding administration costs of an additional $80,000, I wonder if it's needed. The amount of dollars already expended on administration and consulting fees on Bay Beach has already been extensive. I think we need to rely on our experienced staff and numerous consultation reports we currently have in place. And I truly believe there's something called death by consultation, and I would hate to see Bay Beach fall into that. But thank you for your time.
Are there any questions of the delegation? Councilor Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Noyes. Nice to see you. I know that I share your disappointment in having to make some of the items provisional, but I just wanted to get your thoughts as a longtime member of the Accessibility Committee. Are you comfortable with the accessibility aspects that are incorporated into the design features that will remain and will be built?
Yes, I am. And just to address that, I think the staff here reported that they met the standards for the accessibility at the AODA standards, and I think in many cases they've exceeded the standards, and I'm quite pleased to see that. And again, we were very involved in the committee. We were a priority. Accessibility was a priority in the meeting. That's the feeling we received from staff, and we were pleased to see them incorporate. That's why, again, when I first looked at this, without a lot of explanation that I heard tonight, I did have some big red flags flying.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any further questions? Thank you so much.
Yes.
So we will move on to PDS 40-2017. Could I get a mover? Susanko? Comments or questions? All in favor? Opposed, if any? Carried. Okay, could I get a mover on PDS 41-2017, the Bay Beach Site and Permits Update? Thank you, Councilor Passero. Comments or questions? Worship?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if we could get the first question answered, and that's with respect to the $85,000 from community groups that Ms. Noyes referred to.
I can do that through you, Mr. Chair. The $85,000 is a donation from the Ridgeway Lions Club for the playground. The $16,000 was the amount originally estimated for purchased beach mats, but when we met with the Burt Miller Nature Club, they expressed an interest in constructing them in the same manner that they did with the Waverly Beach mats. So that $16,000, I believe, was removed from the budget. And I believe that the Burt Miller Nature Club received a grant, applied for and received a grant for the materials for the beach mats at Waverly Beach Park, and we'd be hoping to pursue the same thing in this regard.
So if they don't get the grant, how do we deal with that issue?
I guess that might be something that we would consider the contingency for, in the event that that would be a change that we had not expected.
If I might, Mr. Chair. So a lot of my anxiety about this stems from this. We made an application to the region for some matching funding based on some cost estimates. Those cost estimates didn't include either the $80,000 potential administrative contract administration fee, nor did it include anything for a contingency. Do you have any comment about that?
I'm not familiar with whether those were included or not. I do know that the project cost that application was based on, I looked it up today, was $2.135 million. I'm not sure why that number was selected. So we do have a little bit of leeway, but I would have to double check again that application and then also speak to the region.
Well, I don't know that we're going to make much headway with the region, Mr. Chair. I think that that door was opened. We were able to get a horse out of the barn, and I think they closed the barn door. So I think that any additional costs are going to be costs that we're going to have to bear unless there's some other source of funding that might be available. I heard the comments with respect to the contingency, and I know that – did Mr. Brady want to make a comment?
Just one additional matter concerning the regional money. The regional money was capped at $800,000. The region had set in place that there would be $800,000 available for this plus monies that we had received for other projects. So regardless of what we had would ask for, the maximum amount of money that we would be able to, we were a candidate for from the region was $800,000, and we were very fortunate to actually be granted that amount of money. So we have the maximum amount that we could have received from the region based on the project, actually regardless of the actual size or scope of the project.
That was 850.
Correct.
850.
So I wonder if we could get some further clarification of why the provisional items were selected as opposed to other features. Does it really just relate to the integrity of the project?
So you're asking why the features that were identified as provisional items were identified? Is that correct? I think that was noted by Donna, but they were items that we felt could easily be constructed at a future date. So the intent would be to construct the concrete pad and put the footings down for the pavilion with the intent that that would be something we could add later on. With the pergola, same thing, it's something that could be added at a later date as opposed to a shore wall or something that forms the foundation of the project and really needs to go in at the beginning. So all of those provisional items we felt would be easy to come back and install.
If I might, Mr. Chair. So Ms. Hine made reference to 90% of something. Do we anticipate that the detailed design costs are going to further fluctuate?
At this point, the only further fluctuation would be when the project is tendered, and those tender prices will depend on market conditions. So that's the only other variable that we still have to deal with.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, is it the plan then of staff to create the tender document and include the provisional items as components that the bidders can put a price in case, in the event, we find that we have the additional money because the other costs are lower?
That is correct. The intent will be to still include those items in the tender, but as provisional items so that the town is not obligated to include those in the package. So at least we'll have construction costs coming from a contractor. We'll have a good idea of what those would cost. And if we do not spend the project contingency or more funding becomes available, we have the opportunity to add those back into the contract.
So if I might just finally then, Mr. Chair, we have in the recommended changes an $80,000 contract administration fee on top of the town's costs, on top of whatever the original $120,000 was.
That is correct. We have included that.
And we also have $164,000 for contingency. So if we didn't, if we don't have to spend the contingency on anything that arises, we may have $164,000 available, correct?
That is correct.
And if we, what's the advice on the, I'm interested in your advice with respect to the contract. It wasn't part of the master plan cost estimate, nor was it part of the detailed design cost estimate. It does show up in the recommended changes.
With respect to contract administration, we will want to have someone on site to be overseeing the project, to be inspecting the construction, to be performing all the paperwork. In some cases, that has been done internally by staff. In other cases, we retain a consultant to do that. I do believe that staff, during one of our team meetings, had a conversation about that and felt that we don't have the internal resources at this time, if this project would be constructed this fall and next summer, to perform contract administration. So we elected to carry it forward in this cost estimate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any further questions? Marcia?
Thank you. Through you to Ms. Hansen, just my question is, I'm wondering if staff had thought of any ways to generate some revenue this season for the beach, perhaps by charging non-residents entry fees to the beach. Was there any thought around that?
Through you, Mr. Chair. Through the master plan, we had committed to not charging entry fees until the improvements had been made. Now, council has a prerogative to advance that to charge this year. We had intended to come back to council to make a final decision about that at some point once we had finished construction, or we're going through construction of the park. But that was the original intent in the master plan, was not to charge until we'd actually completed construction.
Thank you. And furthermore, what I'm wondering, if we do have the numbers from last year, an estimate of how many visitors we had, and I know I remember seeing that through the consultation, through the planning partnership, so we probably could get an idea of how much revenue we could generate this season if we were to reconsider that. Is that right?
I think we would have the numbers to estimate, yes.
Thank you. And just a comment, I'm really struggling with this increase. I've spoken with a number of my constituents who are very happy that we've found consensus and we're moving forward, but they're not comfortable with spending any more tax dollars on the project. So I'm really trying to see where, you know, we can obviously not compromise too much, but stay within the original plan as far as funding goes. But I'm interested to see or listen to my colleagues as well. Thank you.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to Ms. Hansen, the $80,000 plus from the Lions, you had said donation. Has that been a donation or is that an offer to fundraise?
Through you, Mr. Chair, that is an offer to fundraise with ultimately the donation of the funds. So their intent is to fundraise, collect the funds, and when they've raised the funds, to donate that back to the town for the purposes of the playground.
For the playground?
Yes, for the playground.
When will the playground be built?
We are looking at construction of the playground in the fall of 2018.
So after they have given us the funds?
Yes, and there will be a report forthcoming, likely in July, where this will be formally presented to council. I know we've talked about it, but through the budget bylaw, council actually has to accept that donation. So we will be coming forth with a report to council outlining the various donations, but the $85,000 donation council needs to accept. So,
if they're not successful in their fundraising efforts, who pays for the playground?
Through the and Mr. Jansen can correct me if I'm wrong, but through the funding for the project as outlined in the report, I believe there was a contingency included if the fundraising was not successful. Is that correct? We had referred to those two reserves, the facilities reserve and the capital reserve?
I don't know that we had ever specifically identified a reserve for that. I think in general with the capital worksheet submission, we had identified that reserves could be contemplated to substitute for that.
So ultimately, either drawn from reserve, but the town will be, the playground's going to get built.
Ultimately, yes.
Which is my concern, because generally it's very tough to fundraise for something that people know, regardless of how the fundraising efforts go, it's going to happen anyways, and all they're doing is replenishing the town coffers. Seeing how this is playing out now, and I know that was their choice to do the playground, but I would hope that if we have any other offers from groups to fundraise, that it would be towards something that's not going to be built until the dollars are in hand. The community seems to rally much better around projects that won't get built until the money's in the bank. I don't know how this will go, but I wish them the best because we're short dollars as it is.
Just to clarify, I probably didn't speak properly, but I think our intent is that the money has to be raised before the playground goes in.
Okay. I have a second question regarding the design, Mr. Chair. We had a conversation at some point last year, and maybe this goes more towards the operational aspect, but I keep seeing it reappear in the plans. But it's regarding the pickup drop-off area, and I keep seeing the notation of food trucks in there. We had a delegation last year from the Crystal Beach BIA who are in opposition to food trucks, and I'm not too thrilled to see them there either. My hope is that this will be an economic catalyst for the neighborhood as a whole to draw people away from the beach, not just 40 feet to get something to eat and then come back again. At what point will we be able to put that issue to rest?
It's driven by demand. If council does not want to see food trucks there, then council doesn't have to approve it. It's really providing the opportunity if that becomes a demand in the future. We as staff have not moved forward with any activity or bylaw that will attract or permit it at this time.
The spaces that we see then would just be regular parking spaces until such a time that council granted food truck permits to be put into a couple of those spaces.
Those spaces are drop-off areas, not parking. They can be used for food trucks or they can be used for drop-off. I think Mr. Brady wants to clarify as well.
Just one additional comment, if I might. There is absolutely no place on the property for any food truck. So the food truck that exists at Bay Beach today, that is not provided for. So there will be no truck of any form on the beach.
On the beach, yes, but the design I'm looking at shows them in the kind of the kiss and ride areas. Yes, okay, but not on the property.
Yeah.
But I'm not even in favor of having them in the kiss and ride. So as long as that's not something that's proceeding without full council debate, I'm comfortable there. And then my last question would be regarding the contingency items and the $75,000 extra that's being requested. Once we put this out to tender and it comes back, are we obligated to go forward with everything that was requested in the tender? I know we can add provisional items. Do we have the ability to take away given what pricing comes back at that point?
To a certain extent, usually if you're changing the contract on more than 10%, it's a practice to retender it. If we feel we are going to have difficulty coming in on that budget, we would add more provisional items. So we would make more of the items provisional. And we can ask for alternate prices as well, which we have done in the past. So we might ask for alternate prices for less expensive paving material or site furniture, that type of thing. So our intent is to allow ourselves as many options in terms of putting together the tender and the contract in the end.
Thank you for those answers. And finally, Mr. Chair, regarding the pavilion itself, I noticed that that's part of the festival square. So I'm guessing that anything that needs to be done from a foundation point of view to accommodate the pavilion will be already included in the festival square, and then going forward at some point, either provisionally through this contract or at a later date, would just be the construction of the physical pavilion itself that would have to be done.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Hansen.
Your Worship.
Yeah, just a couple of points. We've also had comment from our economic development general manager about the food trucks. He's not a big fan of food trucks either, nor am I. The issue about the playground, and I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but my experience has been if the Ridgeway Lions Club commits to something, they actually carry through. So I wouldn't be as concerned as my colleague is. But the other thing that I wanted to comment on, and this I guess maybe is just in general terms, because Councillor Zanko raised it, and there may be others in town that feel the same way. We took a long time to get to a process here to find a way that we could take maximum advantage of this park from a perspective that would be acceptable to the majority of people that are dealing with it. So consensus was built on this. I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that it's a good plan. And just because there was perhaps some underestimation of what the cost might be, I don't think that in itself should cause us great concern, because if one looks at the changes in pricing, fully almost $250,000 relate to a contingency and an administrative contract administration. That's $250,000, and that's more than half of the difference in what we're looking at. So that we don't have to spend that. That's money that can be allocated towards the actual infrastructure itself. I'm a little disappointed that we're at this point. I'm disappointed that we're not going to be able to fulfill this in the initial swoop and cover all things, particularly the pavilion and the pergola, which I think are really essential. I'm not too concerned about the boardwalk, which is a $108,000 item. I mean, if it's there, fine, and if it's not there, it doesn't really affect the integrity or the usability of the entire area. The pergola and the pavilion, I think, are very important, and if I were looking at ways to pay for those, I definitely would not be supportive of contract administration. That may not be popular with staff, and it may not be the most prudent thing, because staff is telling us that we should be looking at this cost. So I spoke to Councillor Lubertz about this. Councillor Lubertz is pleased that the project is moving forward. He's also disappointed about the costs and how they've turned out. But his view is that as long as we include these items that are being removed as provisional items in our tender documents, he's fine with that, because that provides opportunities at least in the future to build those, or depending on what kind of tendering we get, there may be money available to include more items than we anticipate at this stage of the game. I'm really hoping that we don't get into the contingency issue, but if there are no things that arise, if there is no expanded area of fowler toad habitat, if there is no need for additional shore wall protection, if there is no fill or soil issues, we may have money then. We may have $164,000, which will be available for us to complete some of this work, and that just about covers the cost of the, well, it does cover the cost of the pavilion and the pergola. I'm going to take a deep breath and hope that when we get to the contract consideration stage, that we'll have these things covered. And if not, then this is a long-term process. We'll eventually get to where we need to get, but I don't think that we get to where we want to get. I don't think that we make this the fantastic site that it can be if we don't fulfill or at least go through with the bulk of what we have seen as a vision. And the final comment I want to make is that at one point we were going to try to sell the northeast parking lot for a price, and we were encouraged not to do that by the general manager of the Economic Development Corporation, because he believed that once we get this facility constructed, that property will be worth a lot more than we had originally planned. And now that the real estate market in Fort Erie has taken off, even if we don't do anything, the value of that parcel has just gone up over the past year. So that was money from that was to be assisting us to fund these improvements. So when we get to that particular parcel, we may find that we have some of the resources that we need. So, as I said, deep breath and hope for the best. Thank you.
Councilor Sanko?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Chair, to Ms. Hansen. Just a further question to my original question regarding perhaps looking at charging non-residents entry this year. Do we have measures in place that would allow us to control that as far as resources? And I know there's two entrance ways. Would it even be possible for this season if we were to reconsider?
At this point, we do not have the processes in place that we have in, that we are intending to have in place. I can't speak to the operational staff that's out there right now managing the site, so I don't know that I could answer that question. I guess it's something we could get back to you on. We do have two entrances that are somewhat controlled at this point. It would be identifying a mechanism to charge and collect and identify residents and non-residents. Those are details that in terms of the logistics that we still have to work out.
Thank you.
Councilor Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I disagree with His Worship in that I would not look to take out that $80,000 for contract admin. We're either going to pay somebody to do that or we're going to pay a staff person to do it. But either way, somebody's going to be doing it. And I already have quite a few things sitting on the desks of staff that are being pushed off because of time commitments and other priorities. I understand that, but I don't know if I'm willing to have those further pushed off for another several months while a staff person is out doing something that may or may not be in their comfort or expertise or skill level as far as managing a project of this size and day-to-day construction. So I would hope that council would see fit to leave that in there. We either pay someone who's here now or we bring somebody else in. But if we pay to bring somebody else in, my question is, who's going to do the work on the desks of the staff person that we have out there? We have a Parks and Open Space review about to commence. Many of us have a number of initiatives that fall under that and a number of other things happening in the area of Parks and Rec and planning and open spaces. So I just wonder what the ramifications will be if we have a staff taken away and is out at Bay Beach every day. Facilities, we're just trying to keep our heads underwater, so I don't see Mr. Hutton as a viable option in that capacity either. So I just caution council as we move forward whether or not to leave or take that out, but those would be my comments. The other thing I wanted to mention is I could really go either way on this $75,000. I know that staff have done their best to cut, and it's a tough one for me because we have always taken a stance that we should be reinvesting in our current assets to maintain and replace versus investing in new. And we have playground equipment in Stevensville that is due for replacement ahead of schedule. We're fighting for dollars to make that happen. We're looking at replacing equipment and updating our facilities and maintaining things elsewhere. And to invest dollars into a new park, which is number one, a capital investment, but then on the other hand is going to be increased reserve contributions, maintenance costs going forward. When do we ever catch up? And I'm very concerned about that, and I'd be very interested to hear any comments from my other colleagues. But at this point, unless I'm a lone duck on this, but I'm going to put it out there and see what happens. If it fails, it fails. I understand that, but at least I'm going to give it a shot. But I would like to amend this that we remove the allocation of $75,000, and we ask staff to work with the planning partnership to come back with a revised drawing taking that into account. And my final comment is I think we owe it to the existing assets to make sure they're taken care of before we start investing in new, especially if there's some things further down the line that we could look at for some cost savings, contingency funds. There's got to be another $75,000 that we could either do at a later date, add provisionally, or look to lessen. But I would ask that to be an amendment made. I'm not sure if I got the wording correct or if we would just have to defeat that recommendation before moving forward, but I would look to the acting clerk for some advice.
I would suggest that in this regard that amendment would just be removing that second that, what you're asking for, is it correct?
That is correct. I'm just wondering, and maybe this is a question through you, Mr. Chair, to our acting CO, how does that affect the balance of the report? Because most of the report is taking into account that $75,000 will be there.
In answer to your question, if council desire is to approve the first VAT and to remove the second VAT. This report will go forward as it is for information purposes. We will simply move forward in terms of putting out the contract, and we'll find another $75,000 as a contingency item. It may mean that the sidewalk that comes into the main park will be reduced in size.
If I could, Mr. Chair, based on Mr. Brady's comments, if that were to be included as a provisional item, that's something that we could reinstate dependent on pricing or even at a later date to draw funds from reserve at that time, could we not?
Yes.
Okay, so I would like to let that motion stand. And my motion would be to remove the second recommendation of amendment of, or the amendment to the capital budget for the allocation of the $75,000.
Do I have a seconder for that?
Don't need one.
Don't need. Okay, Your Worship.
Yeah, I just wonder if we could get Ms. Hansen's comment again. She had mentioned when Councillor Passero had first raised that issue of removing 75, she had given a couple of suggestions, one of which was reducing the width of the walkways. Was there another one?
Through you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the comment was to start looking at reducing the size of the festival square or perhaps that main walkway that enters the park.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, does the reduction of the width of the walkways have any impacts on accessibility?
It appears to be quite wide. The minimum width of a pathway with respect to accessible access in parks is 1.8 meters.
So, or we could take $75,000 and not bother with the playground.
We, at this point, don't have any money allocated to the playground. We're depending on that $85,000 donation.
We could add that to something else.
The $85,000 donation?
Could reduce the size of the washers, could we not?
We could look at that. I don't know what the implications of removing 75 from that would be, but we could look at it.
Could eliminate the change rooms, couldn't we?
We could.
Oh, my point is this. We have a plan, and I get that we're going to be over budget. I get that we're going to be looking at making some of these things, which I think are fundamental aspects of this park, provisional items, which means they may not get built depending on what comes in with the contract tenders. It may be that there'll be other items that we'll have to take out depending on what comes in with respect to the tenders. I'm not going to support the resolution. We have a $1.8 million surplus. Staff is recommending that we use $75,000 of that with respect to trying to move forward and keep this as whole as we possibly can under the circumstances. I'm not going to support this because I don't want to cut out any more than what we're contemplating now without actually hitting at the integrity of the.
Okay, so we're dealing with the amendment on the floor. Are there any further comments or questions? All in favor of the amendment? Against? Up to me. I think I'll vote with Councillor Passero on this one. So the amendment as amended. All in favor? Opposed? Could I please have a mover for PDS 42-2017, the review of the Economic Development and Tourism Corporation Industrial Land Development Strategy? Councilor Zanko? Any comments or questions? Councilor Passero?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is through to our acting CO, who I'm guessing is wearing two hats this evening. A couple of questions regarding some of the recommendations, Mr. Brady. The recommendation that council endorse and then contemplate funding the area-wide environmental impact study, how do the results of that study bear on our future decision-making? Are we bound by the results of that study? Can we go against the study and further remove conservation overlays, even amidst what the study recommends? And are we even in a position now where we could remove conservation overlay on some properties where we could use it as an industrial parcel in the absence of an EIS?
Mr. Brady?
Through you, Councilor Passero, there's a series of questions there. I'll start with the one. The protocol that council has used for removing ECs, particularly when it's of large areas like we're talking in this case, 84 hectares in total would be potentially affected. has been to have an EIS completed, to have that information reviewed by our Environmental Advisory Committee, and then bring it to council for a vote. What I'm anticipating is that through this study, a significant portion of the 84 hectares would be identified as being able to be the EC to be removed, and then council would be in a position to make that recommendation, and then there would be additional industrial areas.
For you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brady, if it's your opinion that the majority could be up for removal, what are we basing that on? Do we have enough information in-house that we can make that statement, and we're just looking for an EIS to confirm that?
Mr. Brady?
Through you to Council Passero. No, we don't have enough information in-house. I'm basing it on my own experience and on the EISs that have been done in town on similar types of properties.
Okay. If I could, Mr. Chair, regarding the Canadian Motor Speedway lands and their inclusion in the urban area boundaries, the recommendation says a part of a future municipal comprehensive review. Is that not the one currently underway then? That would be one in the future, or is it one in the same?
Through to Councillor Passero. If you look at the wording on the third that and the fourth that, you'll see that they're different. They're the third one says the inclusion of approximately 159 hectares in northeast Stevensville adjacent to the existing industrial development for inclusion in the birth in the back. That refers to now as part of this MCR. What I'm setting the stage for is that in the future, there will be additional work done by the region and that this area be given consideration at that time. So I've set it up in two stages. The industrial land strategy had counted on a certain number of hectares being brought in by a certain date. The 159 hectares certainly does most of that, and it doesn't say here, but I'm being optimistic that when we bring in the additional lands associated with the removal of the EC, we will be well within the range of that that would be required. But I think it's important to identify it's not all the Canadian Motor Speedway lands, it's the lands east of Lara Road, which were the development portion, that would be considered in the future.
Through you, Mr. Chair, to the acting CAO. I'm trying to skim through the report very quickly, but is that number of hectares referenced anywhere?
I'm sorry, the total number of hectares that the
I'm sorry, for the
industrial
CMS,
land strategy?
Nope, for the CMS lands east of Lower Road.
No, it isn't. It's approximately about 500 hectares, 500 acres.
If I could, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brady, could I get your comment then as to whether or not you think including that at this stage of the game, I know that you want to help advance it at the current time, but I'm having a hard time deciphering whether or not I think it muddies the waters as to what we're trying to do in the here and now. Could you help me along?
Certainly, I'll try. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get a clear message to the region that the priority area for inclusion of a possible urban boundary expansion is the 159 hectares northeast of Stevensville, which is clearly from all vantage points, the most appropriate area to be included, and it is very close to the total amount of land that is being required. In some of my discussions with the region, some of the staff at the region have identified to me that they think the Canadian Motor Speedway needs to be considered, that these lands need to be considered. So I'm trying to put this into perspective for them so that they can see that I've not ignored their interests.
Okay. And lastly, Mr. Chair, because I know I'm running out of time, the last recommendation for staff to review the properties identified for redesignation, does this have to be done to get them off the books and solidify our case with the region going forward, or is this over and above? I'm just wondering about a cost-benefit analysis given the amount of time referenced in the report needed for staff to complete that aspect.
The final direction or the final that, this is something that is coming from the EDTC industrial land development strategy. I wanted to bring it to council's attention. My opinion is it's not a priority from my perspective, but it's certainly something that came forward from that strategy, and that's why I brought it to the attention of council. If council wishes us to pursue it, we'll bring back a work program to outline the amount of work that it would require and to do that work.
Okay, I will give up the floor to my colleagues. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So it'll be your worship and then Councillor Knott.
Right, so my understanding is that the town currently has so many hectares of industrially designated and zoned land, some of which this report, the ILES, has indicated is not marketable, whether it's because of the location, whether it's because of environmental issues, whether it's because of its likelihood of serviceability, whether it's because of the size of the parcel. She and the consultant who did the report indicate that they're not really of any value and no one's going to buy them, and therefore all they do is cloud what we have as an inventory of industrially zoned and designated lands. So that as long as they're there, anyone from the region can say, well, you've got X number of hectares of land, you need to include those. My understanding is that the recommendation in the industrial land strategy is to remove these so that we then have a justification for arguing why we need to expand outside the urban boundary. So I think if we don't look at these, I think the biggest concern would be what the private landowner's view of our desire to change that designation might be, but I don't know how we get from here to there without authorizing staff to embark upon that process, because until we take those out of our inventory, the region looks at it and says, you've got those lands, even if they're not developable, which we know and which we've been told. So I think we need to keep that recommendation in, because I think that goes to the heart of how we expand boundary to accommodate industrial land uses.
Anything further, Your Worship?
No.
Councilor Knott?
Thank you, Chair. I agree completely with what the Mayor just said and with Councilor Passero on the industrial land strategy. My question for Mr. Brady, through you, Mr. Chair, is just in layman's terms, if we include the CMS lands and they don't meet the 2020 deadline set out by the OMB, what happens to that land?
Mr. Brady?
Councilor, that's a very good question. If the and a question that is going to perplex me to some end. What it says in the OMB decision is that if there's not action being taken on the development of these properties by the end of 2020, that the zoning reverts to agricultural. That's what it says. And as we move forward, I was hopeful that we would have, a site plan, a servicing strategy, something like that that would be in place, and the funding mechanism from the Canadian Motor Speedway to do that work that we could use as a lever to maintain it. But if we don't have that by 2020, these lands become revert to agricultural, and at that point in time, there is no ability to develop these properties for any other purposes without some form of urban boundary expansion.
Councilor Knott?
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Based on what you just said then, if the region agrees and includes this 159 as part of our industrial land and inclusion for in our area boundaries, and it reverts back to agricultural, what would the undertaking then be for the town? Would we have the option to change the zoning to industrial?
I need to do a little clarification. The 159 that's being suggested in Stevensville is not part of the CMS lands. So that's the priority area for expansion of the urban boundary and the inclusion of these lands for employment purposes. And we're asking the region to seriously consider that as part of what their ongoing exercise. The CMS lands is in the future, and this sets the stage well beyond 2020, if you will, as to how these lands might be dealt with.
Mr. Matt?
Okay, so I'm going to ask the perpetually upbeat and positive question. CMS comes through, shovels in the ground next year, or in 2019, this puppy gets built and is ready in 2020 or 2021. Where are we then with our industrial land?
You ready?
At that point in time, using your optimistic scenario, we also have received the ability to have 159 hectares in Stevensville, so that's where the concentration of industrial activity is going to occur. As a part of the CMS lands, the lands to the south of the CMS are designated for industrial expansion. So there will be additional industrial lands that will be provided for as a part of that. Those lands are tied into CMS, but nonetheless, they certainly will be available for industrial purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final question regarding just the CMS lands. If there is no activity by 2020 and it does revert to agriculture, but the region did recommend that it be put inside the urban boundary and it was included, I know I might be going around again with the same question here, but I just want to make sure that I have a good understanding of this. Under the OMB requirements that are currently in place, would that then, when it reverts, automatically come back out of the urban boundary at that point?
To cancel that, the lands that are part of the CMS property are not inside the urban boundary. They are a special policy area, and that special policy area allows for certain forms of development and allows for servicing to be put into them. But it did not put them inside the urban boundary. What I'm doing in terms of the recommendation that I'm making here is I'm trying to patch as much as I can as we work forward into the future. If they're developed, they're developed, great. If they don't develop and they're there, these are, in my opinion, good candidates for inclusion inside the urban boundary, at which point in time all of that lands would be utilized for employment purposes with the proposal that's in front of you.
Any further questions? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to our acting CAO, given that we hope to know more over the next 12 months to 18 months, or at least I hope to know more over that time period regarding CMS shoveling the ground and everything else that we are very optimistic for. Is it premature to be putting this on the region of Niagara's radar screen regarding inclusion or non-inclusion to the urban area? I know what you're doing, Mr. Brady, because planning, future, I got it, but I'm wondering, does this muddy the waters as far as what the region looks at? And would this in any way, in your opinion, hinder our ability to get the 159 if they say, well, you know what, Fort Erie also wants in the future to have CMS lands inside there, so we're going to cut a little chunk off of that. So you don't in any way think that this prejudices our position going forward on the 159?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything further? All in favor? Opposed, if any? Carried. Okay, are there any new business inquiries?
Your Worship. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask the acting CAO about beach security this year at Bay Beach. I presume that there is going to be. Somehow there's a rumor going around that there isn't.
Thank you. I'll address that question. Actually, that's interesting. I went to Bay Beach this Saturday. It was a beautiful day, as you're all well aware, and I went for a little walk along the beach. And I wasn't there particularly to see how our beach security was going, but nonetheless, I happened to be there. And when I came in to work on Monday, I sent a message over to Sean Hutton, who's in charge of the beach security people at the beach, and it went something like this. I witnessed your staff at the beach, and I found how excellent a job they were doing. They were there. They had a presence. They were walking about. They were very cordial to the people. And there was one young lady who had a beer. and somehow had brought that into the park. And they went to her and very kindly asked her, told her that she wasn't permitted to have that beer. And she was a bit embarrassed about it, but she gave the beer to them and they poured it out and filled the sand back in and gave her the beer back and wished her the best. And I think something to the effect of, I think you're getting a little red on the back, and gave her some advice in terms of her health care. But nonetheless, the beach security this year, in my humble opinion, is working excellently. It's in a different fashion than it has in the past, but nonetheless, the idea of having a presence on the beach is there, and the staffing, by my one witnessing, which is just a Saturday afternoon, they had no idea I was there. I was in shorts and, you know, but so they certainly weren't doing that because I was there. I think they're doing a wonderful job, and I let Sean know about that this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand it, these are individuals who are employed directly by the municipality as opposed to subcontractors that we've had in the last few years.
Based on the nod that I received from Kelly, yes, they are.
Thank you.
Further? Any comments or questions on the business status report? Seeing none, I'll pass this back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councilor McDermott. That takes us into infrastructure services, and I believe that's Councilor Zanko.
It is. Thank you, Your Worship. We have no presentations or delegations this evening, so that brings us to report IS 17-2017-2016 Water Distribution System Master Plan. Can I get a mover?
So moved.
Councilor McDermott actually beat you to it with his hand. Are there any questions or comments with regard to the report? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All in favor? That carries. Are there any items of new business or inquiries? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had allocated some dollars in the budgets for stormwater management pond dredging and general cleanup. Just wondering when we're able to insert that into our work plan. It's been a great year if you're trying to grow fruits and vegetables so far. Vegetation has been outstanding, but it's also having the same effect on those stormwater management ponds.
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Madam Chair. There were two distinct monies allocated towards the stormwater pond maintenance. One was an inspection program to figure out what type of major maintenance needs to be done on the ponds that exist right now. That first study will be done through a consultant to be retained in July. I spoke to Mr. Hutton recently about that. With respect to additional mowing, we were planning to get an extra mowing done in the spring during the wet time, during the peak growing time, which is right now. Due to the severely wet spring we've had, I'm not sure that has occurred, so the money still is sitting there waiting for 5 cuts this year instead of 4. So it is rolling forward.
Councilor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Are there any other inquiries? Seeing none, does any member of council have any questions regarding the business status report? Seeing none, I will hand the chair back to you.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko. That takes us to Corporate and Community Services, Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services is now in session. We do not have any presentations or delegations this evening. Can I have a, moving on to 9.2, can I have a mover for CS 13-2017? Thank you, Councillor Zanko. The 2016 Health and Safety Report. It's recommended that Council direct staff to continue efforts to improve worker and health safety, reduce incidents and associated costs, and limit Workplace Safety Insurance Board WSIB expenses. Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Passero?
Just a comment, and this was spoken at the Safety and Award Service Banquet, but just to commend all of our staff for everything that they're doing, right from the top, right down to the bottom. When you look at where we are trending It's absolutely phenomenal, and we want to ensure that every single member of our staff makes it home at the end of every workday. And I'm proud that we've been able to allocate additional resources over the years to make this happen, and I look forward to any future correspondence from staff as to how we can even better what we're doing now, because I, for one, would be 100% in favor. I think it's very important to this council and to me personally, and I commend everyone for doing their parts, right from summer staff right up to the CAO's office. I don't think there's anything more important when it comes to fire safety, but also occupational health and safety for everyone else as well. So thank you to all involved.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That carries. Moving on to FES02-2017, bunker gear and particulate protective flash hoods. Did I say that right, Chief? Very good. Okay. Project request for 2017 capital budget amendment. Can I have a mover? So moved by Councillor Zanko. Just quick to the switch tonight. So that report is on the floor. Comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That carries. Are there any new business inquiries? Seeing none, are there any questions or comments regarding the business status report? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Are there any meetings that anyone wishes to announce? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Worship. If I could make a quick announcement regarding Canada Day fireworks, once again happening July 1st, Canada Day, in case anybody needs a reminder, 10 p.m., the usual spot down on the waterfront on Lakeshore between Beatrice and Dominion. I just reemphasize this this year as well as last, given the movement of dates for the Friendship Festival, that the fireworks is for Canada Day, nothing to do with the dates of the Friendship Festival. So regardless of what else is happening that weekend, you can always count on the fireworks Canada Day, 10 p.m., usual spot at the waterfront, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd just like to remind everybody that the unveiling for the mosaic is at 5:30 in the foyer of the Leisureplex next Monday.
I think it's 5:45, but people like me should be told to be there at 5:30.
Well, I was saying 5. Yeah. I was asked specifically to say 5:30 for your benefit. So.
I'm sure that was the strategy.
It was.
Any other meetings? Okay. Councillor Nutt, motion to adjourn?
Absolutely, Your Worship. The Council and Committee of the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 7:44 p.m.
All those in favor? That is carried.